Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Amila's Window Seat on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Maya Mona Youssef, also known as Mumu Fresh. And today, I'm really excited. This is our last show for Women's History Month. And I'm really excited because I have some men in the studio and online who I love very dearly. And as I always say, women's rights is not just a women's issue. It takes all of us working together to eradicate the inequities that women face in the workplace, at home, in the political fields, and across the board. So I want to bring in three guests, and I'm going to introduce all of them. But real quick, we're going to... Hey, Jack, you got that track loaded up? Okay, so I'm a little bit pressed to share with y'all that... We just released myself, Drez from Black Sheep, and the producer Tico. We just released a song called Working. We actually recorded it as a part of like a challenge at DJ Jazzy Jeff's playlist retreat. And so like he, you know, just blindly put us into different groups, and the name of our group was Killer Whales. And we had like a couple different like tracks that we could sample from. And we had a couple hours, and we, you know, it was like 13 groups. We all have to fight over studio time, and we have a couple hours to get a song done. And yeah, so this is a song that we recorded, but we never put it out. And anyway, Tico reached out to me and Drez, and we all kind of talked about like, yeah, we should drop that joint. That joint was kind of crazy. And yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited about the song right now, so I'm gonna share it with y'all. It's available online. Mumu Fresh Working featuring Drez from Black Sheep.
M-A-I-M-O-U-N-A, her song is extra sweet. She got you stuck to funk that last until the next retreat. J-C-T, go the truth, vanilla tale. We the real shit, you never too old to hustle. That's what you gotta recognize, the hustle. Mean you gotta sell weed or sling pies, and anything you can't imagine, there's a hustle to it. So all you really gotta do, put some muscle to it. I'm not gonna rush you through it, I'ma let it marinate. And if you still don't understand, well then let me elaborate. Checking me, name's Dress, style is notated. I'm destined for dough like a check that's post-dated. Cause a sling soul that be landing over the hills, stretching out of manholes. I be reaching for mills. All it takes a word or two, bet you see real clear. I'm a grown man, pocket full of female deer. Pertinent to get the dough, got an array of ways. I be from the golden era, guess these be the dormant days. Let me school your new school, we cake fantastic. Cause we a school with the flu, we make the class sick.
Remember the name. Respect to the God who make me hustle hard. He like, Mumu, why you over there faking with the bars? Come with it. Heard that your spinach be hard as spinach. Get it iron in it. Words weighted like Zion in it. Defiant and isn't it? We survival of the litters. Jeff schooled me to the business. Now I'll be moving different. While the game be hustling backwards. We forward thinking, finally owning our masters. You Kool-Aid drinking, but we be rising like Lazarus. Fame is the chain of the mentally captured. I put that work in just to rise above the madness. I got a bad habit with automatics. I'm over 21, but bitch, I'm still a savage. When I get all up in my bed, this shit is tragic. Lame dudes dangle carrots like some rabbits. But God bless a girl that got her own cabbage. Boss magic.
Okay, I was pressed. I was pressed, okay.
I love that.
I was so excited that he spelled my name out. I've been trying to figure out, like, since August, how to do that. I love my M-A, I was like, Black Sheep. Okay, I'm fangirling. And I'm good. Okay, and I'm back. All right, so let's talk. First, I want to introduce my friend. I'm so excited that he is in the United States. He's been traveling abroad. We met in Nicaragua when I was on a tour with the State Department, doing workshops and performances to end femicides throughout Central America and really throughout the world. We were dealing a lot with domestic violence and violence against women as a result of cartel or whatever other reasons, you know, we were there to lift up the spirit of women and to restore the respect and reverence for our mothers, our Mother Earth. And so anyway, let me show y'all. I have Mario Sacasa. I like to say his name. Mario Sacasa, all the way from Nicaragua. Hey. He is here. There he is. Say hey.
Happy to be here.
So Mario, tell us about your work in Nicaragua, because you all as well have been, you know, we were just guests. You all have already been doing the work at home, and you know, your music reflects that. So tell us about it.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. You know, I'm from Nicaragua. I had to leave. You know, we have a turbulent history in Nicaragua, natural disasters, but also civil wars and revolutions. And at 5 years old, I had to leave Nicaragua to come to exile to the U.S. And actually, Washington, D.C. was my home. So this is where really I learned to play, actually right there on 18th Street. That's where I learned to play guitar, you know, as a kid and coming to play. And then I went back to Nicaragua 12 years ago, and as a musician, but also to start a nonprofit called Future of Nicaragua. Mm. We work with mobility, providing appropriate wheelchairs for children and for adults. And that really, for me, was an amazing experience to break down a lot of barriers. You know, need doesn't have classified by politics, by age, by genre, by political affiliations. So to me, it was a great learning experience. And it's a channel like music that just transcends a lot of the division that exists in Central America. Mm-hmm. So when you came to visit us and through the music, bring that message, you know, to first talk about it. What I realized when you talked to the youths that we would gather, a lot of people had a hard time talking about the reality. Nobody wants to talk about the violence that's happening towards women in Central America. Mm-hmm. And everybody, it's very uncomfortable. So it was very important that through the music we could kind of break through. So you're still causing waves.
Okay.
This was weeks ago, months ago, but people are still talking about your visit. Because you broke down a lot of... Yeah.
I can't wait to go back. It was incredible. And just the young people who spoke, in particular when we were at that school, I don't know, maybe it was the second day, I think, of our trip, and the young people who had the courage to stand up and talk about their personal experiences or their parents, you know, and it really kind of sparked all the other children to start having a conversation.
Yeah, that's the word, courage, because it's still taboo. There's still a lot of machismo that if you... You know, so the new generations, we were talking off camera, we're the father, you know, of young children. All of us have young boys.
Yeah.
It's so important to give them the tools and the example of what it is. I mean, things that 20 years ago were considered normal, today it's just, there's an awakening. You can't treat women that way. You can't say certain things. But the first step is being able to talk about it. Yeah.
And I think it was cool too. One of the Lisa, she's my Nicaraguan mama, Lisa. But she said something really important the day that she picked us up from the airport. She said, we also have to teach the moms, because they're raising these boys, you know, and we have to instill in them the lessons that the boys will take with them into manhood. You know, you can't have this double standard for your sons, you know, versus your daughters, and then expect them not to grow up and have double standards, you know, that they, you know, so. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, it is really dope. And that's what I mean. Like, it's a community thing. We all, it's something that we have to work together to eradicate. It's not, you know, just one group who's radicalized and, you know, feminist. It's really like a community issue. When you can't respect the womb that you came out of, it's everybody's problem, you know. So,
That's fascinating. In Nicaragua, that's really, I mean, it's single parents, single mothers.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know, make the country. I grew up with a single mom because my father went to fight in the war. And it's so important, you know, to have those examples of strong women and women who have to really be mother and father.
Yeah.
But the conversation, Lizette is right. It has to be inclusive of the community because we also can't undo, I mean, steps that are being taken forward to be undone by older mindset, older generations.
Right.
It's very important that everybody's involved in the conversation.
Well, Neil Irving.
It's me.
How are you?
I'm quite well, thank you.
Wonderful. Neil, I would like to bring you into the conversation. We met a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And I thought it was really dope. You have a company called, or an organization called, Men Can Stop Rape.
Yes.
And when I first heard that name, it was like, wow, he's right. Men can stop rape. Because normally, you know, women will get together and talk about how to stop rape.
That's right.
But the truth of the matter is, men can stop rape.
That's right.
So tell me about your organization.
So Men Can Stop Rape, now in our 22nd year, based here in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. Literally just around the corner from this hotel where mm-hmm. we established an organization that was going to try and figure out how to mobilize men to find and use our strength in preventing men's violence against girls and women. And 20 plus years later, in the midst of the Me Too movement, our work to train professionals around engaging boys and men, our youth development work in communities in urban, rural, and suburban communities across the country, and our public education campaigns mm-hmm. have helped disseminate a message that says exactly that, that men can stop rape, men can stop all forms of gender-based violence, because the research is really clear. The majority of us as men will never perpetrate an act of sexual assault. That research mm-hmm. is really clear. But what that research also identifies is that overwhelmingly, when sexual assault occurs, even in same-sex relationships, obviously, it's a man who's perpetrating that violence. Mm. And so what we've really focused on is, how do we invite other men who are maybe not acting violently, but who may be silently contributing to a culture where misogyny, patriarchy can exist and mm-hmm. acts out in the lives of people every day. And so mm-hmm. what's been really successful, I think what's really resonated with people in our work, is that it is not anti-male, but it is really lifting up what we think is the best of who we are as men.
Right. And that's so important.
It's really important.
That's so important. Well, thank you, Neil. I have another guest on the line. Daniel Blackman, are you there?
I'm here. Good to hear from y'all. Great conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us. So I met Daniel at a conference this year I attended for the first time, called Nexus. And I mean, you can probably tell more about it, but just from my experience, it was a conference where a group of community organizers, grassroots organizers, heads of companies. It was so many different people.
Track.
Yeah, people from different walks of life were dealing with impact investment, how to use their funds for impact investments, how to kind of right some of the wrongs that capitalism has done to various communities. And I met Daniel because he was there with a young lady, his goddaughter, who had been human trafficked throughout Atlanta. And he shared with me that Atlanta is the hub for human trafficking in the United States. I had no idea. I go to Atlanta all the time. And a lot of people don't know that it's happening, because it's happening, you know, in ways that are hard to detect. So, Daniel, could you talk about your organization, the work you do in human trafficking?
Yeah, of course. I mean, first and foremost, to your other two guests, I mean, the gentleman before me just made, I think, the most profound statement, which is, it's going to take men. You know, it's not something that we have to put on the shoulders of women. It's something that men have to take ownership and responsibility for. I'm the father of three boys, and I have to raise them to be men. And my example to their mother and my example to the women I interact with is going to be critical. To your point, Nexus is a phenomenal organization that I'm a member of that brings together philanthropists and social justice advocates and social entrepreneurs to really solve some of the world's biggest problems. And it just so happens that one of those problems is human trafficking. And for those of your listeners, you know, human trafficking is not just about the sex slave, sex trade, but it's also about forced labor. And unfortunately, in 2010, I had my goddaughter abducted from Atlanta. And, you know, before I even take a couple of seconds and go into that, I'd like to say that Atlanta is the bedrock of the civil rights movement. And we have a lot of great things going on with the film industry and having so many different cultural things that happen in the epicenter of really, you know, cultural diversity. But in that same respect, we have a big blemish, partly due to having the busiest airport in the world, having some of the largest convention space in the world by square footage, being a town that has attracted the Final Four and the college football national championship this year and the Super Bowl in 2019. We've become a city that unfortunately has amassed a lot of wealth, and has also perpetuated the human trafficking, sex sex slavery and forced labor movement, which is really destroying our families, our girls, and quite frankly, our boys. My goddaughter was abducted by someone that she thought she really liked that had been being used by his father to really, you know, go after other young girls. And unfortunately, we didn't catch the signs early, but instead of being victims, we decided to take ownership and responsibility to prevent other families from going through it. And, you know, I'm happy to say that even though my goddaughter was missing for 4 years, she's, you know, safe and sound, and she's engaged now. She's a mother, and she's rebuilding her life. But she's doing that by creating survivor summer camps where young girls can either prevent themselves from being put in that position, or young girls that have been rescued can begin to rebuild their lives and empower themselves from their experiences to helping to change the world. So I'm happy to be a part of this conversation.
Wow. That is so heavy. And I met her and at the Nexus Summit, and just hearing her talk about rebuilding her life and just what it takes to kind of prayer, forgiveness, like self-reflection, you know, because what I heard her speak about is, one, the individual, you tend to blame yourself for it. And then not just that, the courts tend to blame you for it, because I remember her saying that she was having an issue with her daughter being taken by the courts, and they were saying that she was unfit to parent because she was a prostitute. And yeah, prostitution is not the same thing as being a sex slave. That's not the same thing. And can you speak to, on a political level, what's happening on that level to deal with this, like how they're looking at this?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know, human trafficking is a multi-billion dollar industry because, you know, again, we think about it just from sex slavery. But the reality is forced labor around the world is an industry that has really forced a lot of really bad things to happen. But the challenge that we're seeing is not just in the United States, but around the world. It's hard to prosecute with international laws and even laws in the United States. Our policies are just not set up to deal with it. I mean, if you look at how we deal with the drug problem in the United States, our solution to a lot of problems is mass incarceration. You know, if somebody is too poor to pay their fine, then we incarcerate them. If we have to deal with the opioid crisis or how we dealt with crack cocaine, we incarcerated people.
Right.
Well, now the challenge is with human trafficking, because we haven't really found a way to, you know, address the problem, we're re-victimizing the victims. For my goddaughter, she was not only said to be unfit, but she was missing for 4 years, and they had things like, you know, well, do you have a job? Do you have employment? Do you have a place to stay? You know, what is your mental state to take care of your child? There are not a lot, number one, resources to help these young women and young men rebound from their lives. Mm-hmm. But then the really challenging part is, this is such a foreign issue. Like, when people in the United States, especially lawmakers, think of human trafficking, they think of Liam Neeson and the movie Taken, right? They think it's like this glamorized, you got snatched, you get taken up, when the reality is, you know, you have people that fly into cities like Atlanta, and their sole purpose is to fly and to have sex with a child. You have other people that are doing trafficking in a sense of they're coming in and they're spending money on it, and they're doing it through Instagram and other means of social media. Mm-hmm. And then you have sex slavery, where young women are being held captive, like my goddaughter, against their will and forced into a life of prostitution. And then they go to court to try and rectify it, usually because they've been arrested or picked up off the street. And then they're facing sentences. And in our case, and I'll close here, she ended up being rescued. But the problem was, she was gone for 4 years. So by the time she had gone to court, which I can't really discuss the case, but she went into a position where she wanted custody of one of the children, and everything that could have been against her was against her, and it did not give her any leeway to get information or to get her child back. So we're going through that now.
And so how do you feel like that can be dealt with? Because, you know, we always say, well, you know, vote and you know, have your officials, elected officials, deal with it. But do you feel like, you know, the people that we voted in office are taking the correct approach to this, or that they even understand it enough? You know, are they on the ground enough?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't think so. And I'm sure your other guests can speak to this as well. But the one thing that I can say is, you know, human trafficking is relatively a new issue. It's not new as in what the crimes against humanity. But, you know, we have these so many things are going on in the United States right now. You know, we just have not figured out a way to, you know, look at our penal system and look at incarceration and, you know, our criminal justice system. I think the three things that need to happen immediately is, number one, education. Mm-hmm. We need to work with the gentlemen that are on this call, with you, and, you know, through every venue from music to film to mm-hmm. policymakers. And we need to educate people about the realities of it, knowing that the United States is one of the fastest growing developed countries dealing with this problem. Understand that $68 billion internationally has, you know, really fueled this movement. And knowing about the signs online, I mean, you have, you know, people now that are doing things online, and we don't really have a way to prosecute right. people from different perspectives. So my goal would be, number one, educate the community. Number two, educate them politically as well, not just about the problem, but about policies that have worked in places around the country, including Washington, where they have done some things to make it harder for online trafficking. But outside of that, we need to really, the same way how we go to PTA meetings or we go to grassroots meetings or we march for our lives or whatever,
right.
we need to get, excuse my French, we need to get pissed off and say, you know what, enough is enough, and right. our girls' bodies are not for sale.
Yeah, I guess for me, I would really want us to emphasize, first, we got to end demand, mm-hmm. right? And I want to speak specifically around people who are trafficked for sex. I mean, we can right. get into human trafficking and labor, and I think that's an important piece. You know, you see some of the young brothers who are out here in D.C. Selling Pringles and candy bars, and they tell you it's for their sports team. Mm-hmm. And many of them are being trafficked for labor. It's a whole wow. it's a whole hustle. And trafficked to be, they, you know, brought from Baltimore here to D.C. to work for the day. Their parents may be aware of the fact that they're down here working. But they, one, are not really receiving any funding for it. And the people who are organizing it are skillfully organized to manipulate that. But I think it's important. I want to really emphasize those who are trafficked for sex, particularly because, you know, the average age of girls entering into sex trafficking is 12 years old. Mm. And that you now are having, as was said, adult men who are paying to have sex with children. Mm. And so the end of demand part of what I said is really trying to emphasize a 12-year-old child has no ability to consent. It's not right. prostitution. Right. They have no ability to consent.
Right.
They are being manipulated, they're being controlled, and yet when law enforcement, under the current policies and guidelines, and some of those are changing, as was said, in Atlanta and Washington State, D.C. as well, other areas, we arrest the child and give the buyer a ticket, a fine.
Hmm.
And many of these purchasers, and this is across the country, particularly domestically, internationally, American citizens are some of the largest consumers of sex trafficking and sex travel.
Hmm.
But in the United States, the average profile of a buyer is a middle-class, married white male.
Wow.
So what we're saying is black and brown girls are being trafficked for sex as children, and we are consequencing them through the court system rather than consequencing the buyers. And so I've been trying to educate some of my friends, some of our network, to understand and think about secondhand smoke or seatbelt law, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 20 years ago, it was not a mandatory, 30 years mandatory, that you buckled your seatbelt before you drove.
Right.
But we changed the public policy to say that it is illegal to drive without your seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
It should be illegal to try to purchase a child for sex.
Right.
And yet we've not put the policies in place and the accountability procedures in place to help protect our children. So for me, that's a really important thing around ending the demand, and that we may not change people's hearts as quickly as we can affect or impact not only their resources, but their coming and goings. You know, getting a drunk driving charge now comes with a $10,000 minimum fine,
right.
let alone the stigmas that are connected with it. We need to put the same kind of structures in place for people who try to buy sex.
Right, yep. And what is that? There was a story, I'm going to try to find it. There was a story of a young girl who had been trafficked for sex, and she ended up shooting and killing her abductor. Do you remember her name? Because she's facing a life sentence right now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there are several, and I don't, I'm on the tip of my tongue.
Right now. Hold on.
There's several cases where that's unfolded, and where young people finally have the courage to get away from their captors, and again, are consequenced for the act of killing or harming someone. And no one is investigating or holding up the fact that, like the gentleman's goddaughter, this person was held as a slave.
Right.
So I there's a
and
couple
it should
of different
be self-defense.
Ones. I want to say
her name was Centoya Brown.
Centoya Brown. Correct.
Yep. She was 15 years old and sentenced to 51 years in prison.
Yes. For being held as a sex slave, held captive, and finally having the courage to stand up and try to take her life back. Yeah. And now she's facing 51 years.
And it's funny because the reason I even heard about the story, because I was not aware of the story when it actually happened, when she was first sentenced, because, you know, during the Meek Mill case, the whole free Meek Mill, someone made a post online and said, you know, people are rallying around Meek Mills and that's cool. But who rallied for Centoya Brown?
Correct.
I was like, who's that? You know, so I started to investigate that. And it is, I mean, it is appalling the things that we will rally around and the things that we won't.
Correct.
And why, you know, why is that mentality? And Centoya Brown was talking about the fact that people won't rally for her because they look at her as a prostitute as opposed to a sex slave and a victim.
Which, just real quickly, and I don't want to take up the space, but real quickly, the system is not broken. It is working exactly as it has been designed to work as it relates to misogyny and sexism and patriarchy. So that we fault the child because we have seen her as less than valuable because she is chosen, in their belief, to do this work. That we have demonized her in a way in which, well, she gets what she deserves. We're ignoring the fact that this is a child.
Right.
And so the system of rape culture, patriarchy, misogyny continues to negatively impact us all as a society when we don't recognize that there are some people willing to harm others because they can and because we allow them in our silence to get away with it.
And I think from my perspective, coming from Central America, the change is going to come with awareness, and it's very surprising to hear these things happening right here in the U.S. and Atlanta. I did not know that was so. The awareness factor, because I mean, more and more the dangers of the internet and these loopholes where they can get access to the children. The change is going to come with that education factor, like we're talking about, and to be able to confront these topics that are difficult to talk about, they're uncomfortable, and you know, the advocacy to see, okay, where's the system not, like you said, they're going after the wrong person here. The victim is, you know, being. So it begins talking about it, gaining awareness, so that hopefully we have an awakening that in 10, 20 years we'll say, wow, 2018, that's something we wouldn't even consider, you know.
It happened in our
happening now.
Was what you said, part of the disability piece. Remember, we were talking earlier, you know, ramps for wheelchairs and accessibility for people with physical disabilities or others. You know, we had to learn that as a society. And once we did, we thought, oh my goodness, there's not a curb here. How would someone get here? Or the parking that people have. So it can happen. The change can happen.
Yeah.
Hey, can I add something really quick?
Yeah, please do.
So something the gentleman said about ending the demand and the culture about, you know, the seat belts, you know, 50 years ago and the wheelchair ramps and everything. It's a real interesting movement. But the challenge that I face as a business owner, I own a company called Social Karma with my wife. And, you know, we work with large corporations and sports teams and all kind of different groups around consulting the issue. And the challenge is the stigma that goes along with it. Because let's be honest, if the characteristic of a, you know, trafficking, you know, a perpetrator or someone that's engaging in that kind of behavior is a middle class or middle aged white male that has a family. You know, if we're saying that, which is in reality, it's true. We're now saying, okay, well, we want Coca-Cola to get involved. Well, who's a Coca-Cola executive, right? So, if we want these corporations involved, we've got to start dealing with this internally, because the only way you change the culture, you know, obviously a movement, and it starts with the people. But when you have commercials on TVs for cars and women are naked in commercials for ads or Doritos commercials or whatever,
on.
I mean, we've got to change the culture of how we're allowing our girls to be seen. And it's so deep, because even in sports, women that play sports are not compensated the same way. So the perception we're allowing to perpetuate about women is so watered down. So the demand is going to continue to take place, because a lot of these corporations that we're relying on to help us to change the culture and the problem are actually feeding in through it through media, and we're not doing anything about it. So I agree, it has to be a change. There are great businesses right now, for instance, I'm speaking with the Ritz Carlton. They're going to work with the Marriott chain to begin to have conversations to retrain their workers to identify victims and different areas. That's a bold step, but we need more people trying to do that same work.
Yeah. And I would just like to even address that in terms of the advertisement and how women are used and exploited in advertisement. You know, my whole career, from the time that I first started getting into the music business and learning about how this worked, I just kept hearing people say, well, sex sells, sex sells. You can't sell music without selling sex. And I was always kind of just like, why? Especially because I started as a 17-year-old. So, you know, I wasn't, you know, I'm like, I haven't even really been in a real relationship. Why do I have to sell sex? Like, why can't I just be talented and sell talent? Or even, I mean, you know, since this verse I released on Tiny Desk, I've had people, and not, you know, they don't mean any harm, but they'll say, your men will say to me, like, wow, you're really smart. That's like, wow. Like, you know, like for a woman,
right,
like, wow.
Right.
I'm like, people still say that? Like, you still, like, you know, it's still surprising that women can be intelligent too, you know? Or they'll say, like, you know, you could be further along if you would just, like, you know, you have a body. Why don't you just use it? You'll be further along.
Right.
And I think it's problematic to exploit ourselves that way, because, like you're saying, it perpetuates this demand, you know. And I would like to see a world, and it's one of the reasons I fight so hard and push my music independently, because I would like to create a world where my daughter or someone else coming after me, you know, they can be valued for their intellect and for their talent and what they have to contribute to the world, as opposed to being seen as a body first, which is how it is. You know, when you walk in a room, you're seen as a body first. They're going to look you up and down and have a value proposition, you know, based on the way your body looks, how much money you can make them. I mean, it happens all the time. You know, we're in boardrooms and having meetings with execs about music, and the first conversation is about my body. It's not about my talent, you know. And that kind of thought process in its own way is its own kind of, you know, they're selling sex, you know what I mean? It's own kind of trafficking. It really is.
I mean, absolutely. And again, it's on a continuum. It's on a continuum of where we're contributing to a culture where that's seen as an acceptable business practice.
Right.
Where sex sells versus talent sells, so that we are teaching our young boys how they are supposed to see girls and women, and we're teaching girls and women how they're supposed to show up in the world, and both of them are being told lies.
Right.
So that now when we get someone who is purchasing a child for sex, we say, well, there's a business exchange. It's fair. Yeah. And so I think, again, it goes back to right now in the midst of this Me Too movement that's unfolding, we would not have 20 years ago seen powerful white corporate men, Bill O'Reilly, I forget the guy from Fox News, Roger Ayers. We wouldn't have seen these men held accountable, Matt Lauer. We wouldn't have seen them held accountable for their behavior. So
that's why it went on so long, because they weren't held accountable.
Exactly right. And so how do we sustain it and not only think about accountability as men as getting our pound of flesh, but accountability as it relates to motor vehicles talks across this country that vehicular homicides have been down and going down for 20, 30 years because people are buckling seatbelts.
Right.
You know, there's severe consequences if you drink and drive.
Right.
So it's the same kind of social norm and culture change that we can have, because the last thing I'll say about what's for sale in advertisement, right? We really commodify children's bodies. We have timelines when young women who are underage, as if that would matter for some, are going to become legal.
Right.
And so we normalize that, and we say that that is valuable, and it so exacerbates and feeds a culture that says you are only, that it feeds the culture that says sex sells. We can change it. We're seeing signs of it changing. Your music is absolutely an example of the kind of artistry that needs to be in the world. But the violence will tell you, oh, just you're never going to change it.
Right.
You're never going to change it.
It's changing. I see it changing. I'm grateful, because there were definitely times where I felt penalized for not playing ball, you know, not going along with the system and the way it was. On the record we just released, there's a song called Never Bring Me Down. And the second verse from that is the one that we did on Tiny Desk. But the opening, which kind of inspired the song, was an interview from Rick Ross, where he was saying that he doesn't sign female rappers, right? And the interviewer was saying, well, how come, you know, women deserve a chance to, and you have a big platform, how come you don't sign women rappers? He said, well, if I pay for your photo shoot, I should be able to have sex with you too.
Mm.
And it's like, but don't you pay for the photo shoots of everyone on your label? Isn't that what you do as a label executive? Because you recoup when they sell records, but it's not enough, you know? And that's where the line came from. How much do I owe you for what's already mine?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because
yeah,
it
yeah,
is
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
thought of, it's not enough that you have talent, that you perform on a professional level, you show up on time, you do your job, you make money for the company, and they recoup their products, you know, with a high percentage. That's not enough. You still owe your body too, you know, and that's a general practice, and that's expected, you know. And when you don't, you deal with backlash from
yep.
it,
yep.
you know.
And I think there's a huge responsibility on artists, different types of artists. In Mexico, there's a group called Café Tacuba,
mm-hmm.
and they had lyrics from their earlier albums. It's a very popular group that were, you know, verbally violent towards women or.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided they're not going to perform them anymore in concerts. And they publicly went out and said, we're going to stop doing these
yeah.
concerts. And people complained.
Mm-hmm.
But that sends a huge message
mm-hmm.
for
right.
artists or for the first time picking up a microphone or a guitar
right.
or a film student who's picking up a camera and saying, look,
yes.
these you know pillars of this music or this art form are saying no more.
And you can grow.
And we were mistaken in doing
that's
this.
Right.
So that's a huge step.
And that's such a big thing that you can grow as an artist.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that the industry traps you into. Whatever
oh, yeah.
identity you create for yourself, most of the time it's not real. Whatever you create for yourself, that you have to stay in that.
Oh, no,
no matter
right.
how much you grow,
right.
how you know, you have children now, and they want you to keep perpetuating
yeah.
the same thing, as opposed to saying, you know, when you know better, then you do better.
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
And at whatever point that you realize, like, you know, maybe that's where I was when I was 19 or 20. Like, that's what I believed in. That was okay for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm 25 or I'm 35. That's not okay for me anymore. And I should be able to say, like, no, I rebuke that.
That's
you know,
right.
because artists have
that's
to
right.
grow publicly. And
that's
people,
right.
you know, track your growth and they hold you to it. Most people don't have to grow publicly. So the person you were in your early 20s, you're not held
That's
accountable
right.
to
That's
that
right.
same person. And that as you grow, you know, you should be able to say, look, like you're saying, I was mistaken. That's not cool, actually. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is a better way to live,
yeah.
you know?
I mean, I can incorporate.
I think we need to find a way to utilize this message, because we have to remember a lot of these folks are not directly impacted, right? So you take an artist that sells millions of records. We've got to find a way to try and change the paradigm. I'll give you an example. In the NFL, when these guys sign a contract, three of my friends that played in the NFL, they all shared the same story. When they get signed, they have something called the NFL Rookie Symposium. That's a three-day crash course in what you should or should not do while you get these millions of dollars, right? Let's just be honest. Most of these guys that come from the street that actually live the lifestyle that's in their music, there is a period of maturity. But at some point, we've got to say, okay, instead of just making it about sex slavery, which they might not identify with, we need to let them understand that 50% of all the individuals that are trafficked, or over 50%, are children, right? So you take an artist like T.I. or Usher, and I only use their names because they're Atlanta artists,
yeah.
but these guys have children, right? So we've got to start educating them as parents, because the music, I spoke to an artist that is very well known one time, and I said, man, I need you to get on this. And his behind the off record answer to me was, man, I don't want to be a hypocrite, because, you know, the music and the
wow.
persona and who he is. He said, I don't want to be a hypocrite because I know this is an issue, but I'm not going to change the music, right? But he wanted to get involved. He just didn't have, you know, the infrastructure. And now, on the one hand, I'm upset, right? But on the other hand, I understand that this is a very sensitive issue to deal with. What I think we need to do is, this call has a lot of structure, and you're an artist. So we need to work on the messaging so that we can identify them, not as artists, but as, you know, citizens and human beings and parents and, you know,
right.
husbands and fathers. I think that is the way that the message is going to begin to change, when we identify them where they are and not try to get them to really take ownership and be an expert on the issue.
Well, I think that's right. And look, you know, I come to this work as a youth advocate. That's my passion. That's my expertise. That's my training. But I now know more around gender-based violence and know how to connect it and serving young people around primary prevention. And so what I hear in your comments is that credible messenger. Whether it be urban, rural, suburban, domestic, international, you know, who are the men in those communities that are examples, who are leaders, who are willing to stand up and show what healthy masculinity is about, how that connects to strength and courage and social emotional intelligence, what faith and spiritual practices you have. Those are the things that our boys and young people need to see as the standard, as the expectation. I'll give one example. William Gay is a defensive back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, a dear friend and a serious activist in the field of domestic violence. He spends his off seasons building homes for women and children who are escaping domestic violence. There are men in the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, MLS. I know that in the European soccer leagues, there are just as many, and also in cricket. So whatever peer group you are a part of, there are men who are demonstrating this kind of healthy masculinity and can be messengers to other men and to children and women that this is what we expect of men. This is what men's courage, men's strength, men's role as allies in our lives with women and girls and children in our lives is expected to do. And I think that resonates with many of us because most people, I think, not everybody, but I think most people want to do the right thing. They want to live a good life. They want to be good people. And so it's an invitation for them to use that energy and that desire in the service of others. I don't think there's anything more important. And yet, again, nothing more impactful either.
Mm. Wow. Mario, do you have any music for us?
I do. Thank you.
Give us some vibes and vibrations.
We need that. Heavy relations.
Yeah. Well, it's a kind of, it's a music that from my last EP. It's an instrumental track. Mm. And I remember you mentioned it at our concert. Oh. It's called Leaving Your Echo. And sometimes, you know, where words can't express things that better with my guitar, you know. Mm-hmm. But it has to do a lot with the healing of, you know, coming back to my country, leaving, and then just with the nurturing aspect of what it is, like you said, also the motherly nature of each of our countries where we're born or where we're living, you know, and taking care. And Leaving Your Echo.
Wonderful. It's so conversational. That's what we were talking about. Yeah, Nick and I were so conversational. It's like just a really honest, intimate conversation with somebody you care about. You know?
And we recorded it that way. We actually recorded that in within nature, in front of a beach, a beach studio, old fashioned, you know, like kind of like right here. We put
that's
the mics
amazing.
Up,
yeah.
Counted the song off, and just that's it. Take one. Real organic.
I found myself on Rock Creek Park, and then I was at the beach watching them surfers go, man. So that you said you did it at the beach, because that's my spot. That's my happy place.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was amazing.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. We had such a good time. He's just taking me back. We had such a good time in Nicaragua. Oh, we got to go to the, Pollo Laguna? Laguna de
Pollo.
Yeah,
yeah,
oh, my God. It's like the heat from the volcano warms the water.
Oh, wow.
Like,
it's
so
crazy.
Nice. And, like, it's, all of the... with like the sand is kind of like charcoal or something, like it's like volcanic ash. And me being all extra, I'm gonna rub it all over my whole face and
exfoliate that.
Yeah, just like just walking around with volcanic ash on me all day, just being extra. Yeah, that was beautiful. I can't wait to go back.
Oh. Well, it's the land of lakes, volcanoes, and poets. You know, Nicaragua, and we have the Caribbean, you know, the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific. So water is a big part of our culture and our. You know, just our history, but I find it fascinating that we're talking, that we're able to have this space. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely.
Because it's a global conversation.
That's right.
And I'm going to go back to Nicaragua and with that courage and these ideas to say, I love what you said about the positive role models.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And how important that is for young boys and girls to say, hey, that's a way I could, a path I could follow.
And taking that time to be that in your communities, because you know everybody's so busy. We working, we hustling, we moving, but it's like still making that time to be an impact and an inspiration in a young person's life, because that could change their entire direction of, you know, who they're gonna become and what they're gonna do in this world.
Absolutely,
absolutely. And if they're not those platforms, I mean, create them. You know, just really make the thing you want to be a part of. They're not groups maybe for young boys who don't have role models in the tough neighborhoods in Nicaragua, but perhaps it's time to grab a group of individuals who could tell their story. They don't have to be experts.
That's right.
But at least have, you know.
I was telling Neil earlier that I started this company, MKY Entertainment, and which is kind of like the company that I do a lot of my business from. But also, I started structuring this label because I never found a label that I felt like could understand me or could, could really support my expansiveness, not just who I was at the moment, but who I was going to be, you know, what my destiny was. And so my mom said, well, maybe it doesn't exist yet. Maybe you have to create the company or the organization or the label that would house an artist like you. So it won't just be for you, but for artists coming behind you to really be able to be their whole selves, you know, a label that not just, you know, is there to exploit your talent and to create wealth, but also to take care of the whole person, who keeps the whole person in mind, you know, because, you know, a lot of artists, we tend to, because we are emotional beings and we feel things really deeply, we tend to go to drugs or have a lot of mental challenges that are not taken into consideration. You know, when you go off the deep end, everyone that was around you, your whole team, you know, it's just like, they didn't make it. Another one bites the dust.
Right.
As opposed to really, you know, we have to care for our artists, you know. We have to care for our artists, those who impact the world so deeply. They need the most care and attention and, you know, helping us to stay in the right direction so that we can be a gift to the world. So, I totally agree with that. You know, create the world we want to see, be the change that we want to see. So if those things don't exist in the world as we see them currently, it's up to us to create those things, you know.
Well, and technology makes it so we're not alone in doing it. There's so many people who, you don't have to be an expert in anything, but, you know, my Muna knows this, that, you know, my oldest daughter is she's a singer. She's in chorus. She stopped playing no soccer, no basketball. She wants to sing. And she's like, oh, but I want to be famous. And I was like, well, you know, Hitler was famous. Like, well, you know, what's the talent? What's the craft that you want to nurture? Yeah. And my instinct is always, who are the people? Where are the places where you can go see what your passions are? Yeah. Because that joy, again, it feels to me, you know, don't tell my middle daughter this, but love is a real weighty, tangible resource. And for us, it's the thing that your art helps capture in a way in which is comforting, is healing, is nurturing, it's inspiring. And you know, the violence would always tell you opposite of that. So I just so agree that we need to love and nurture and support our artists, because you all can connect people from all over the world now in a way in which you couldn't do, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Yeah. So it is a resource that you all bring to our work that we can have and point to examples of the goodness at all times. It's just a powerful thing, man.
Well, Daniel, do you have any last words? You still online?
Yeah, can I add something? Can you hear me?
Yes, please do.
So here's my challenge, right? Like, I think you've done a phenomenal job, and I want to thank the other brothers that are on this call, because this is what it takes. But I would like to leave you and everyone on this call and everybody listening with a challenge. There are two things I did that changed my global perspective on human rights. The first one was, you know, going into Stewart County Detention Center, which is a deportation center in Georgia, because it's one thing to understand immigration and, you know, dreamers and deportation. You see it on the news, you read the statistics, but it's another thing when you go in and speak to the people and hear their stories and understand. Second thing I did was I last year did something called the Mana Law, which were men that recited poetry that dealt with women's issues. And the poem that I had to recite was called I Woke Up Next to a Rape Survivor. And it was really hard, because as a man, I had to really sit there. And even though I'm not married to a survivor of rape, I had to tell the story as if I was the partner of a survivor. And what I would challenge everyone is to speak to a survivor this year. Find somewhere where someone has survived domestic violence or rape or human trafficking. And in many cases, this is a challenge, because these organizations that protect these women, there's some very particular means they use to protect the identities and the safety of these women. But if you have the opportunity to volunteer at a homeless shelter or to go into a jail where a young lady was trafficked, we do all these challenges like the ALS challenge, and, you know, we get caught up in all these things. But Heather Hare, here's where I'll close. Heather Hare said, if you're not outraged, then you're, you know, man, I totally had a blank. I apologize. But she said something about not being outraged. And when we see a police shooting, we're outraged. When we see a young white girl overdose on heroin, we're outraged. We need to see the faces of these babies that are being trafficked and that are being sexually assaulted. And we need to understand their stories, because until our hearts change, our society will not change. So I hope that everyone sometime this year will find the time to find a survivor or to speak to a victim and really understand their story.
Daniel, how can you be reached? And if someone wants to get involved with the work that you're doing, how can they do that?
You can follow me on Twitter at BlackmanDNA. My name is Daniel Blackman. That's BlackMan. And then DNA. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can send me a direct message. Or you can go to DanielBlackman.com. That's D-A-N-I-E-L. Blackman is B-L-A-C-K-M-A-N again, .com. And they could request a meeting with me, or they can send me their information. I can get back in response with them. But I thank you for the platform.
Wonderful,
and my heart goes out to these brothers on this call. Thank you, gentlemen, for what you're doing.
You as well, brother. You
thank
as
you.
Well.
And Neil, tell us how people can get involved with Men Can Stop Rape.
Yeah, you can find all of my personal and all the organizational social media at www.mencanstoprape.org. You can call us directly at 202-265-6530. And, you know, again, thanks to my colleagues, new friends, and obviously thanks to my Muna for setting this up. And a big shout out to the Adams Morgan Youth Leadership Academy and the great
Amalia.
Work that they do. So Amalia is in the house doing great work in the community and leading, like we say. So thank you all.
And Mario Sacasa. I like saying your name. How can everyone find your music?
Well, sure. You can go to www.mariosacasa.com. That's MarioSacasa. And you can also see some photos of the concert we did in the video.
Yes, you can.
And then, but you've inspired me. I'm going to see if I put some links on that website.
Wonderful.
For people to get information and of the work that's happening with colleagues here on this call and in Nicaragua, digging deeper so people have some different avenues.
Wonderful. Well, it's time to wrap this up. I want to thank you all for coming on and speaking about this very important issue and celebrating Women's History Month and doing the work to level the playing field, to bring more wholeness, back to the universe, more balance back to the earth, uplifting our mothers, Mother Earth, the mothers that we came from. My name is Maimuna Youssef, also known as Moo Moo Fresh. And I am your host today on Amila's Window Seat on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, D.C.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.